Frank Muir goes into birds and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Frank, have you heard my impression of a cockerel backing into a farmyard?
Cockerel backing into a farmyard? No, I haven't.
Doodle a cock. A chicken was getting really annoyed with one of her chicks. If your father could see you now, she said, he'd turn in his gravy. Who has a parrot that shouts, "Pieces of four, pieces of four"?
I don't know. Who does have a parrot that shouts "pieces of four"?
Short John Silver.
Alfred, is your new scarecrow any good?
Oh, say it's good. It gave the crow such a fright, they brought back the seed they stolen last week. Frank, why did the film mad chicken cross the road?
I don't know, Alfred. Why did the film mad chicken cross the road?
To see Gregory Peck. After an old lady died, there was an auction of all her possessions, including her pet minor bird. And as the bidding for the minor bird progressed, it was clear that only two rival bidders were after it. The bidding kept going up and up until eventually the bird was knocked down for £1,000. My goodness, I paid a lot for that to the successful bidders and the auctioneer. In fact, I paid about 10 times more than I intended. I just got carried away in the excitement of the bidding. Still, having paid all that money, I hope at least the bird can talk. Talk to the auctioneer? Who do you think's been bidding against you? Two seagulls were flying over a crowded Blackpool beach one bank holiday Monday, and one of them looked down and said to the other, "Oh, I don't know, it takes all the skin out of it, doesn't it?"
Excuse me, I'm afraid I really must complain about this parrot you sold me. It doesn't say a word. You promised it would repeat everything it heard.
Well, it would, sir, but I'm afraid it's stone deaf. Do you know, I once heard of a woman who was so house proud she even put a newspaper under the cuckoo clock. A dutiful son once wanted to give his mother a very special birthday present, so he went out and bought an expensive parrot and had it delivered to her flat. The next day, he rang and asked if she'd been pleased with the bird. "Oh, I was delighted," she replied. "It was wonderful, so tender. I mean, the meat just fell off the bone." The son said, you mean you ate it?" "Oh, yes," said his mother. "Mother," said the son, "that bird could speak 5 languages. She said, "Well, when I put it in the oven, why didn't it say something?" There was a young American dancer whose ambition was to dance for the Royal Ballet in London, but he had no money. Every day he tried to think of ways of crossing the Atlantic, and one morning he was sitting unhappily down at the New York docks when he said out loud, "Oh, my, if only someone could help me to get to England." "I can help you," said a voice. The dancer looked round. There was no one in sight except for a pigeon. "Did you say that?" he said. "Oh, yes," said the pigeon. "Well, it's very kind of you to offer, but I don't see how you can help me to get across the Atlantic." "Not on my own, I can't," said the pigeon, "but my friends will help." And he called out, and suddenly the air was full of pigeons. And each one of them had a piece of string in his beak. And following the chief pigeon's instructions, the dancer tied the loose ends of the strings to his belt, and the birds lifted him up and carried him without effort across the Atlantic. They landed him right in the middle of London by the offices of the Royal Ballet. Wonderful. Unfortunately, this story does have a sad ending. The Royal Ballet turned him down. They didn't want a dancer who was pigeon-toed.
There's a bit of laughter there, a bit of groaning, but almost a clap, Alfred. Now, birds represent many things for human beings. They are seen as symbols of gentleness, freedom, domesticity, or if you're Alfred Hitchcock, menace. From an early age, children are taught of the varieties and habits of birds, but they don't always get the details right. Here are a few howlers from schoolboy essays.
"The smallest known bird is the ladybird."
"An ibis is a bit of the Thames at Oxford."
"A nightjar has other less polite names." It is a china pot kept under the bed.
It's important that children should try and get the details right, because as they grow up, they'll find that birds do definitely have their uses. In the words of Lawrence J. Peter,
a bird in the hand is finger-licking good.
Yes. Man's behavior towards birds is not always as caring as it should be.
Spring is here, a suppering is here. Life is skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me, and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. La 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 la. We've gained notoriety and caused much anxiety in the Audubon Society with our games. They call it impiety and lack of propriety and quite a variety of unpleasant names. But it's not against any religion to want to dispose of a pigeon. So if Sunday you're free, why don't you come with me and we'll poison the pigeons in the park. Maybe we'll do in a squirrel or two while we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We'll murder them all amid laughter and merriment, except for the few we take home to experiment. My pulse will be quickening with each drop of strychnine we feed to a pigeon. It just takes a smidgen to poison a pigeon in the park.
Tom Lehrer. There's much to be learned from the behavior of birds. In some respects, they can teach us a thing or two, according to Robert Lind.
There's nothing in which the birds differ more from man than in the way in which they can build and yet leave a landscape as it was before.
Most of us are fairly knowledgeable about the simpler species. Here's a snippet from Weekend magazine.
If you asked six friends to name the commonest bird in Britain, the odds are that 9 out of 10 would say the sparrow.
Well, the less common species are only familiar to specialists, those people who spend every spare moment bird watching. Here's a report by one such from the American Cage Bird magazine.
There have been times when I used to follow a lonely white eye in the forest, singing lustily all the time, hopping from tree to tree as though calling for a mate.
People who wish to take up bird watching should seek the advice of a qualified expert.
Now, the problem is how to get near enough to photograph them without them being frightened. They're very shy little creatures, birds. It's no use you wandering around with a bag of crusts, crying out, tweet, tweet, because that won't get you nowhere. No, no. The first thing to do is blend with your countryside. Camouflage yourself. Ah, I hear you ask, but how? Well, there are various ways. One method is to tunnel yourself into a haystack, but it's always rather hot in there, and there's the danger of your being loaded into a cart and fed to cattle. So personally, I favour the so-called tree method. You simply become a tree. Now, people often ask me what sort of tree to become, and I always advise the tall, thin person to plump for the conifer. I myself go in for the deciduous. That comes, of course, with your detachable foliage. Rather an expensive item, I know, but you look a bit of a nit in midwinter with all your leaves on. Ah, yes, any bird could see through that.
Kenneth Williams. Birds may often be used as symbols, but sometimes the symbolism seems a little strained. From the Daily Telegraph.
In the armorial bearings recently granted to the Borough Council of North Warwickshire, a hovering kestrel was included in the shield to denote the importance of the aerial situation between the M1 and the M6 and its accessibility from other motorways in the Midlands.
For those of more romantic bent, birds can symbolize more romantic things. Here's an extract from the journals of R.B. Hayden about the poet William Wordsworth.
He said, once in a wood, Mrs. Wordsworth and a lady were walking when a stock dove was cooing. The farmer's wife coming by said to herself, "Oh, I do like stock doves." Mrs. Wordsworth, in all her enthusiasm for Wordsworth poetry, took the old woman to her heart. "But," continued the old woman, "some like him in a pie. For my part, there's nothing like them stewed in onions."
And whilst we're on Wordsworth, let's hear an improvement that F.H. Townsend made to one of the poet's famous couplets. Wordsworth wrote,
"Oh, cuckoo, shall I call thee bird or but a wandering voice?"
To which Townsend added,
"State the alternative preferred with reasons for the choice."
Birds are sometimes thought to be at their most charming in the early morning when they start their dawn chorus. In this little poem, Samuel Hoffenstein doesn't quite agree.
"I love to hear the little bird into song by morning stirred, provided that he doesn't sing before my own awakening. A bird that wakes a fellow up should have been a buttercup."
But certain species of birds do retain a lot of charm.
"If I had the choice, I'd be something lovely and cuddly and lovable. Something like those lovely hummingbirds, which hum with their myriad hues above the flowers. And they've got huge long tongues, you know, all coiled up like watch springs. And I can poke them out to 40 yards long. Which means a hummingbird, Dad, can kiss at immense distances."
"That means that you could stand on the Chiswick flyover and kiss someone up the Staines bypass."
"What's more, you could be hovering 4 foot above the ground and humming."
Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, of course. Birds are popular as pets, though would-be owners should select their species with care. An observation by Fran Lebowitz.
"If you are an owl, being kept as a pet, I applaud and encourage your tendency to hoot. You are to be highly commended for expressing such a sentiment. An owl is, of course, not a pet at all. It is an unforgivable and wistful effort in the direction of whimsy."
But perhaps a more popular caged bird is the budgerigar.
"Tra-la-la-la, I'm a budgerigar. I chatter and cheer up and tweet. In the language of birds, I use very rude words, and everyone murmurs how sweet. If something upsets me, I fly in a rage, and it takes them an hour to clean out my cage. With a titty for lol, and thanks ever so top. Hip, hip, hurrah, I'm a budgerigar." "Tra-la-la-la, I'm a budgerigar. They're trying to teach me to speak. I rehearse day and night, but it doesn't sound right, cause I haven't a roof to my beak. Though some of my feathers have not been the same since I once got mixed up in a badminton game. With their titty for lol and thanks ever so top. Hip, hip, hurrah, I'm a budgerigar. Tra-la-la-la, I'm a budgerigar, but I have been left in the lurch. I'm divorced from my mate, so I sit here in state all alone on my rod polo perch. The ladies don't like me, I'm left high and dry, but even my best friends will not tell me why. With a titty for lol and thanks ever so yeah. Oh, that's near enough. Tra-la-la-la, I'm a budgerigar. Tra-la-la-la. Tra-la-la-la, I'm a budgerigar. My list of long words is immense. I repeat with great ease what is said by MPs. What a pity, it doesn't make sense. I once told a joke that made everyone shriek, but the comics all cracked it the following week. With a titty for lol and thanks ever so tall. Got it this time. Tra-la-la-la, I'm a budgerigar. Hip, hip, hurrah. Hip, hip, hurrah, I'm a budgerigar.
Unmistakably, Arthur Askey. Birds do have disadvantages. The one most constantly harped on in jokes is their tendency to drop messes from a great height. This can be a menace to public buildings, and local councils expend a lot of energy trying to deal with it. A report from the Daily Telegraph.
Henley Council has dropped a proposal to round up pigeons that perch on the town hall and deport them to Yorkshire, after an outcry from bird lovers and Yorkshiremen.
The town of Whitby had to resort to more extreme measures, according to the Whitby Gazette.
Marksmen are carrying out a cull of Whitby seagull population to try and alleviate the problem of gulls nesting on rooftops. This follows the partial failure of this year's egg replacement scheme, when hard-boiled eggs were substituted for freshly laid ones.
On earth would they do that? Some birds can constitute a serious health hazard. From an Essex newspaper.
Parrot disease fears. RSPCA will arrange painless death for owners of birds.
While we're on parrots, here's a useful bit of information in a verse by Robert W. Wood.
The parrot and the carrot we may easily confound. They're very much alike in looks and similar in sound. We recognize the parrot by his clear articulation, for carrots are unable to engage in conversation.
That is terribly useful, isn't it? Boiled beef and parrot. And again, while we're on parrots, we really must hear a bit of this.
I wish to make a complaint.
Sorry, what's that?
Never mind that, my lad. I wish to complain about this parrot, what I purchased not half an hour ago from this very boutique.
I asked the Norwegian blue. What's wrong with it?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it, my lad. It's dead. That's what's wrong with it.
No, he's resting.
But, matey, I know a dead parrot when I see one. And I'm looking at one right now.
No, he's not dead. He's resting. Yeah. Remarkable bird, the Norwegian blue, isn't it, eh? Beautiful plumage.
A plumage? Don't enter into it. He's stone dead.
No, he's resting.
All right, then, if he's resting, I'll wake him up. Hello, Mr. Bully Parrot. I've got a nice fresh banana.
No,
he didn't. You in the cage.
I never.
Yes,
I
you did.
I did.
Hello, Polly. Call a dead parrot.
He's stunned.
Stunned?
Yeah, you stunned him just as he was waking up. Norwegian blue stunned eagerly.
Now look, don't play the slippery eel with me. That parrot is definitely deceased. And when I purchased it not half an hour ago, you assured me that its total lack of movement was due to it being tired and shagged out after a long squawk.
Well, he's probably pining for the field.
Pining for the fjords? What kind of talk is that? And why did he fall flat on his back the moment I got him home?
The Norwegian blue prefers kicking on his back. Remarkable bird, isn't it, eh, Major? Beautiful plumage.
Look, Tosh, I took the liberty of examining that bird when I got it home, and I discovered that the only reason it had been sitting on its perch in the first place was that it had been nailed there.
Oh, of course it would nail that. Listen, Mush, if I hadn't nailed that bird down, it would have muttered up to them bars, bent them apart with its little pecker, and boom!
Boom?
Boom.
Mate, this parrot wouldn't boom if you put 4 million volts through it!
Monty Python's non-flying parrot. John Cleese and Michael Palin. Let's move now from parrots to cuckoos, and hear a poem by Justin Richardson entitled The Ookook.
The cuckoo, cried my child the while I slept. Sweet Pop the cuckoo, oh, its cries impinge. The harbinger is here, and up I leapt to hear the thing harbinge. I flung the casement, thrust the visage through, composed the features in rhapsodic look, cupped the left ear, and lo, I heard an oo, soon followed by a cook. Another oo, a cook, an oo again. A cook, oo cook. Oo cook. Ditto, repeat. I tried to pick up the step, but in vain. I'd oo, missed, cook, the beat. I'd missed the beat. And this would last till June. And nothing could be done now to catch up. This fowl would go on hiccupping its tune. Hick after beastly cup. Ooh, cook! Ooh, cook! That was 4 weeks ago. Four non-stop weeks of contrapuntal blight. My nerves are... What was that? No. 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 No! Spare me the ingale night!
The behavior of cuckoos seems to human sensibilities very antisocial. Mind you, human beings can be pretty antisocial in their own behavior towards birds. A suggestion printed in the Evening Standard.
The problem of imbalance between male and female mallards on the backs at Cambridge was not only causing distress, but there was a very real possibility of the ducks becoming locally extinct. The solution was to catch the excess male mallards and to condition them in the psychology department into homosexuality.
It's really terrible the way human beings try to make the birds do things that are against their nature.
Sir Arthur, could you tell us what first led you to this way of life?
Teaching ravens to fly underwater.
Yes.
Well, it's always very difficult to say what prompts anybody to do anything, let alone getting underwater and teaching ravens to fly. But I think it probably all dates back to a very early age when I was quite a young fellow. My mother, Lady Beryl Streep Giebling, you know, the wonderful dancer, 107 tomorrow and still dancing. She came up to me in the conservatory. I was pruning some walnuts. And she said, Arthur, I wasn't Sir Arthur in those days. She said, Arthur, if you don't get underwater and start teaching ravens to fly, I'll smash your stupid face off. And I think it was this that sort of first started my interest in the whole business of getting them underwater.
Yes. Mm. How old were you then?
I was 47. I'd just majored in O-level in forestry. I'd got through that and was looking about for something to do.
Yes. Where did you stretch your work?
I think it can be said of me that I have never, ever stretched my work. That is one thing I have never done. I can lay my hand on my heart, or indeed anybody else's heart, and say, I have never stretched my work. Yes. Never stretched at all. I think what you probably want to know is when I started my work.
Yes, I'm awfully sorry. I did make an error. Where did you start your work?
Where did I start it? Yes. Well, I started almost immediately. My mother had given me this hint. She's a powerful woman, you know, Lady Beryl. She can break a swan's wing with a blow of her nose. Incredible creature.
Sir Arthur, is it difficult to get ravens to fly underwater?
Well, I think the word difficult is an awfully good one here. Mm. Yes, it is. It's well nigh impossible. I think the trouble is, you see, God, in his infinite wisdom and mercy, designed these creatures to fly in the air,
yes,
rather than through the watery substances of the deep. Hence, they experience enormous difficulty, as you said, difficulty in beating their tiny wings against the water. It's a disastrous experience for them.
Yes. How do you manage to breathe?
Through the mouth and the nose. The usual method, in fact. God gave us these orifices to breathe through, and who am I to condemn him? I think you can't breathe through anything else. If you start breathing through your ears, you can't hear yourself speak for the rushing of the wind. Nose and mouth is what I use, and I trust you do.
Yes, well, I most certainly do, of course.
Good, good.
But what I was meaning was, how do you manage to breathe underwater?
Oh, that's completely impossible. Nobody can breathe underwater. That's That's what makes it so difficult. I have to keep bobbing to the surface every 30 seconds. Makes it impossible to conduct a sustained training program on the ravens. And they're no better. They can't even be taught to hold their beaks. Horrible. There they are, sitting on my wrist. I say, fly, fly, you devils. And they inhale a faceful of water and...
I suppose they drown, do they?
Curtains, yes, they drown. topple off my wrist. Little black feathery figure topples off my wrist. Spirals very slowly down to a watery grave. We're knee-deep in feathers off that part of the coast.
Sir Arthur, have you ever managed to get a raven to fly underwater?
No. I have never managed to get one to fly underwater. Yeah. Not at all. Not a single success in the whole 40 years of training.
Sounds rather a miserable failure, then, your whole life, really, I suppose.
My life has been a miserable failure, yes.
Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. Let's close the program with a famous limerick.
A wonderful bird is the pelican. His mouth can hold more than his belly can. He can take in his beak enough food for a week. I'm damned if I know how the hell he can.
Well, next week our subject will be insects and spiders. Until then, from Alfred and me...
Who's a pretty boy then?
Frank Muir Goes into Birds was written by Simon Brett and produced by Richard Edis.